welcome back to Deadline City. We are your hosts. I'm Zoraida Cordova.
And I'm Danielle Clayton.
And we are back, season three.
Finally. I felt like it took a thousand years, but where are we headed today?
We are headed to the short story zone.
Yes, I'm so excited to visit this zone because I feel like this is a new sort of, not new, but it's a market that has exploded for young adults. And middle grade audiences. And it's always been something that I thought only people who write adult literature could like be involved in. So I'm super excited to talk about short stories and short story collections and what goes into a really, really good one. So, but first, since the start of season three, we should check in.
Okay.
On our deadline lives. You go first.
Oof. Boy, oh boy.
I feel like that sound you made is really just the summary.
It is. So you've never watched Sailor Moon, but for our listeners who watch Sailor Moon, do you know that moment every time Serena / Usagi is fighting like the Negaverse and she's like on the ground and covered in dirt and nobody has come for her, and then she remembers that she's fighting for her friends? That's what I feel like.
Okay, but can you translate for the non, like, Sailor Moon people like me?
I feel like I got hit by a truck and by negative forces this whole summer called deadlines. So, but I did it. I finished my adult magical realism. I finished copy edits for Illusionary, Book 2, and Hollow Crown. I finished, I'm pretty sure I finished something else, but I also launched three books. I launched The Way to Rio Luna, my middle grade debut novel. I launched Wayward Witch, the third and final book in the Broken Bruja series. I launched Vampires Never Get Old, a collection of vampire short stories, which you are in. So, despite there are being like negative things, I think that I'm okay with deadlines right now.
Oh, so you should be booted out of Deadline City.
No, I still have a lot. I just don't need to think about them for another 2 weeks.
Oh,
I mean, technically, I should be thinking about it right now, but I'm just going to allow myself the one to two week reprieve. Let's be real, it'll probably only be 1 week. Because I cannot, you know what I mean?
Right. Yes. So
what about you?
This has been quite a deadline rodeo. So I've turned in, I think, three books during quarantine time. And right now I'm waiting for certain books. I have one, two. One, I've got another edit on before it goes to line edits and copy edits. Another one, I just got my copy edit today. And then I have one more that I'm waiting for copy edits.
Okay.
So heavy lifting is done for two. I have one more heavy lifting thing to do for this final one, which is my middle grade, which I got to announce this year, which I'm so excited for.
I can't wait.
Called The Marvelers. So I'm doing my last edit and line edit on that. But I have a big deadline that I want to hit by the end of this month, beginning of next month, which is my adult book that I'm working on. So I am still living truly.
Is that going to be your NaNoWriMo book?
I'm trying to do OctoRimo.
OctoRimo.
But I'm 12 days in and I only have 35,000 words.
No tentacles?
I don't like you. I regret
you
starting
said
this.
OctoRimo. I thought of octopus.
It's October, you troll. It's October.
Sure. I'm doing Nano. I'm going to do, I have to find a good code name for my Nano book. But that's gonna be the book that I'm gonna be working on during NaNoWriMo and the rest of our season. So hopefully next week I'll have a code name.
Please. That'll be your homework. Okay, a code name. All right. And so something big that you did this fall is you launched a fabulous collection of short stories called Vampires Never Get Old.
That I did.
Tales with Fresh Bite with the lovely Natalie C. Parker.
Yeah.
And what's amazing about this collection, other than the fact that I'm in it, which just makes it so great,
it does.
Is that it's about vampires and it's short stories. And I'm so excited to be able to sort of talk to you about what makes for a good short story. Since you put this collection together, you edited them, and I wanted to talk a little bit about how you edited me and also sort of what we love in short stories, because I'm getting so much, so many messages, and a lot of, some of them are good. Some of them are like fussy, how they, people want a full book from me instead of a short story, which I think is part of my problem with writing short stories. So I wanted to be able to chat out this topic in general. And so let's discuss the short story as an art form, because I never thought that I could ever write one.
Do you think,
honestly,
why is that?
I was scared. I was scared of the form.
I'm very scared
of constraint. Scaled. I was scaled because it's like you're being put in a box, and you only get a certain amount of space and tools at your disposal. And I guess I wasn't trusting myself. And so the first short stories I've ever written started because your cohort in Vampires Never Get Old, one of our very good friends, Natalie C. Parker, did a Tumblr sort of anthology called The Hanging Garden. And all of these YA authors got prompts, whether they were gifts or words. And we had to, I think we were on a cycle of one short story a month to put onto Tumblr. And those are still up. If you look at The Hanging Garden, we will definitely link in the show notes. And you'll find some of my early attempts. So she dragged me kicking and screaming into it. And I got such great stories out of being forced under pressure. Usually 3 days beforehand, I would start the story and I'd be like, this is basura, but let me try it anyway. And it was just really a great exercise of like what the mind and the brain can do when given constraint. And I still can't say I like it, but I love the challenge now of writing a short story.
Yeah. When I was in high school, I was the youngest the youngest editor at my school's literary magazine called Currents.
Of course you, were. Oh,
they did not allow freshmen or sophomores into the literary magazine, but I was like, Mr. Patel, I'm not going to leave this room until I am part of Currents, the literary magazine.
You bullied Mr. Patel.
I did.
You bullied him into getting your way.
He's the best. He's this like crotchety Indian man who like used to always at the end of the year he would bring us like a whole Indian feast.
He would probably like, get this girl out of my face. Let me just give her what she wants.
He just had it with all the students, all the school, and he was advisor, right? I think they gave the teachers, I don't know if they gave the teachers a bonus to be advisors, because I don't know why anyone would have chosen that life.
Especially dealing with your ass.
I was such a snob, because to me, I was like, this is literary fiction, okay, guys, with a capital LF. And I remember us having these like contests, and I just rejected. Like Mr. Patel was like, everyone can just have their piece published in the magazine. It's a high school magazine. And I was like, no, the short story sucks. Like,
my God.
And so I rejected this very nice teacher because I didn't like her poem.
You were a tyrant.
I was a tyrant. I was like, excuse me, this is next to the Kenyon Review, okay?
Oh my God.
So I was obsessed with a short story form. I loved all things like Raymond Carver short stories and Hemingway short stories. And I was just a real bro when it came to that kind of literary fiction. And when I wanted to write novels before I realized there was a division between age groups. I thought that I could get my science fiction published in like Pushcart, which I could not, right? And so I sort of learned that there are outlets where you can have science fiction and fantasy short stories, speculative fiction, like Uncanny Magazine and Lightspeed and Asimov's and all of these things that came over the years. And then there are literary fiction stories. So there are places for everything. But in YA, there's nothing for us. Mm. So I wonder if this is why we have so many more traditionally published anthology collections, right? Because for me, I always saw anthologies as this, like, a group of friends put together this thing. It's like a passion project. But in YA, there's more of a boom where it's like they feel bigger than in other markets.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because I think part of the reason I was afraid of short stories was because of that they felt like literature with a capital L, and that the types of short stories that I wanted to write seemed like they didn't have space for me and space for those stories. And so now that I see that there are all of these great young adult collections, which, gosh, I wish they were when I was a kid, because some of these short stories, they're perfect for teachers to teach the mechanics of writing. And they're such great collections that I really feel like could really help make people feel seen. So many different diverse groups of YA writers writing really topical and wonderful things. For example, the We Need Diverse Books nonprofit, which I work for, has three collections, and one's coming out soon in December, two for YA and two for middle grade. And they are a one-stop shop of stories so that every kid in your classroom can feel like the hero, but you can also teach the mechanics of writing, plot, character, theme, etc., metaphor. And I just am so excited that we are in this sort of publishing age where collections are awesome and do really, really well. And that's why I wanted to talk to you about this, because I wanted to break down the ingredients for a good short story, and then for us to talk about how we approach short stories. Even though I feel like I sort of still fail at this, it would be interesting to discuss.
Well, these were my writing exercises once upon a time. I feel like most of the things that I wrote when I was in high school were short stories, and I approached them as, here's a moment in time. Here's a moment in a greater world. And so that's what we should dive into.
Okay, great. So I think for me, my first ingredient, this is one that I focus a lot on for my own work. And so I'll share an example of one that I really, really like, and then my own, and talk to you about how I approach it, is the killer hook, that first line, first paragraph, which I think is super, super important. And it's something I spend a lot of time on. So I mentioned this collection, but A Universe of Wishes is coming in December of this year. And it has wonderful writers writing sci-fi fantasy stories that show that every kid deserves to be the hero of our world, another world, the future, the past, everything. And the collection opens up with a story called A Universe of Wishes from a writer named Tara Sim. And I'm going to read you her opening, which I thought was really good. He had taken to making wishes whenever he could. At the last morning star, on the edges of tarnished coins, along the cracks of bones that split in fires, it was never enough. No matter how often or how aggressively he wished, his words were never heard, his pleas gone unanswered. And then one day he learned why. Wishes could not be made on innocent things, innocuous things like stars and coins and clovers, because wishes were granted only by the dead. And so that's how her story opens, and you get to go into this world where wishes are literally on the insides of dead people, and they are to be fished out. And it's extraordinary and fascinating what she does with taking this idea of a wish, taking this idea of wishing on a star, and turning it into something that is related to death and necromancy and all of that stuff. It's really good, and it sucks you in the language, and I think the metaphor really pulls you in. And so I really like that opening.
I think it's beautiful. It's so smart, and it makes you wonder what comes next.
Mm-hmm. And you're like, okay, I'm here for it. Do you have a story that has an opening where you were like, oh, sign me up?
Yes, and I didn't even have to open this book, but it is from... There are two that I have. Let me tell you something about unicorns. They're fairies, and fairies aren't to be trusted. And that is from a short story called Virgin by Holly Black in her book, The Poison Eaters and Other Stories. So this is Holly's... I don't know if a lot of people know about this, but Holly has a collection of short stories set in her fae world. And actually, The Coldest Girl in Cold Town is a short story in this collection as well. So that's where the larger book comes from. And I love the idea of taking a story and turning it into something bigger, which is what I did with my magical realism novel, which I will talk about later. But the reason I like about that story, that opening line, is because it's a little bit strange. It is telling you to reverse your expectations, and it is very voicey. Right? This is somebody who's like, you think you know about the world? Well, I know about the world, right? And so I really like that type of character, and I already have a feeling of who she is.
I think the voice is really sassy, and it beckons you to follow. It's like, I want to know what else this person has to say. And it's so interesting, this idea of short stories turning into novels, because I'm also following in your footsteps and in Holly Black's footsteps and turning my short story in your collection, Vampires Never Get Old, into a novel.
Yes. When is it in my inbox?
Because it's not finished.
You can send me chapters as you go along.
Oh my God, I hate it.
It'll be like my own personal Wattpad.
Right. Wattpad for Zoraida. It's just interesting to think about, because this short story in Vampires Never Get Old, which I'm going to read you the opening to and talk to you about how I built that, is set in a world that I will be living in for a while. It's where my adult world is, but I'm also going to come back because everyone is bullying me after reading this short story and saying they want a novel featuring my main character from the short story. And I'm like, okay, I shall succumb to this pressure. And so it's fun to think about short stories as a taste of something larger. You had a great quote about that.
So when I envision stories, I think of them as treats, right? For the most part, they can be a slice from a very, very large cake. And sometimes if you're a traditional person, you cut like a slice, like a triangular slice of the cake. But sometimes other people cut in different shapes. So you get to see different aspects of a world.
Other monsters.
Yes. Just gonna
but
cut.
Even if I cut in the center of the cake? Get then, out of here.
I mean.
Ruin the cake. It's true.
It's like you're removing a piece of a larger puzzle. Or if it is self-contained, it's more like a cupcake, right? A very small treat. Here's a macaron. Here is a tiny eclair. Here is some. Here's a beignet, right?
Whatever.
It doesn't have to be you're cutting inappropriately out of like the cake, like a monster, as Danielle calls you now. Jeez,
if I gave you a cake and you cut a hole in the middle, and it's not a bundt cake where it was baked like that, and you just put your knife in the center of my damn cake and you cut out the center.
It's actually, that's actually the best way to get like even slices so it doesn't fall apart.
We're gonna fight. That's, we're gonna fight. It's gonna be the first fight in Deadline City.
Uh huh. I'm gonna get you a cake and it's just gonna have no center.
I hate it.
No, I'm gonna take a picture of me eating the center of this cake.
You're so rude and so mean. And but I do love your metaphor because I really feel like short stories are can be, they don't always have to be, can be a taste of a piece of a cake, a piece of something. And that's the way that I approached the short story that I wrote for you in Vampires Never Get Old.
Yeah. And sometimes it's accidental, right? My adult speculative fiction novel, speculative fiction, magical realism. It's a book I sold 3 years ago. And I wrote a short story for an anthology called Toil and Trouble, which was edited by Jessica Spotswood and Tess Sharp. And it's about feminism and witchcraft, and I wanted to write a story about a magical family, a grandmother with a curse, and she turns into a tree and she gives her magic to her three descendants, and she chooses three of these descendants. And so you get a glimpse of the day of her death, right? And you sort of get a glimpse of the characters, but you don't know a lot about them. And I just kept thinking of this idea, and I thought this idea would be a great novel. And I also, the idea came to me because there were, you know, I wanted to write about a magical Latinx family. And this short story was a perfect vehicle because I kept asking myself so many questions. The world just felt so much bigger. How does the magic work? Who are these characters? What did this grandmother do in order to get her power, right? What are the sacrifices that were made? What is her history? What are her kids know about her history? And so it just kept snowballing, and I sold the book, and then I had to write the book.
That pesky little thing.
Yeah. It's just not going to write itself. And so for the last 3 years, that's something that I've been working on. But it all started with a short story. And it was, and that was a case where the slice came before the actual cake.
Well, I mean, that's what's happening to me where I wrote this slice for you in Vampires Never Get Old called The House of Black Sapphires. And now I'm wrestling with the cake. This is my Octo-Rhymo whatever book that I'm wrestling with. But I'm also going to be writing a book based on this character now because I'm getting so much mail of people being like, how dare you? So I need to give the people what they want. And so I'm going to read you the opening, and I want to talk about sort of how I approach putting together my short stories. And then I want to hear you do the same because I'm curious because I feel like we have two different processes. So my short story in Zoraida Cordova and Natalie C. Parker's wonderful Vampires Never Get Old is called The House of Black Sapphires. And this is how it starts. They said the Turner women of the House of Black Sapphires were a little strange, that they were just too beautiful, that they were up to no good. They said the Turner women were vampires, and whenever that word appeared, it was time to go. The Turner Firebird would start the morning song from its window perch. It knew when too many were watching, whispering and surveying the beautiful black women who floated in and out of the peculiar apothecary-turned house, their ever-moving coffin of sorts. Bee hated the word vampire, and whenever they arrived in a new city, just like now, she braced for it, for all the other immortal folks to lump them together when they were decidedly not the same. And I have to tell you that I started this whole story in a completely different place. That opening was probably on page 6 of what I originally sent Natalie and Zoraida. And they expertly were like, all of this stuff in the beginning is great backstory, and it's for something else. It's for the cake. It's not for the slice. They scraped off my frosting because they're mean winches, and And they made me start right here. And I think that they were correct.
You have done that to me before. You have been like, this actually starts here.
Oh my God. Yes. So I was getting paid back. But it was true. Like, I needed to get straight in, tell you who the people were, what was happening, and anchor us right in the moment with the character. No backstory, no preamble. My characters are coming to a new city. And before, when I first wrote the story, I started in the old city and them traveling to the new city. And Natalie and Zoraida were like, no, start us right when we're in the new place so that we know how they feel. And you can go back and weave in some of the older details from the past. And I was like, yeah, that was brilliant. Brilliant, 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 because it's not a novel. Mm-hmm. If it was a novel or a novella, then I could spend time in the journey.
Right.
And when I write this novel, I will be able to do great flashback that establishes that journey. But like, that's what the novel's for. The piece of cake is, or where are we right now? And what is the question that we're trying to answer right now?
Right.
For this story.
Absolutely. I love that. And I think you did such a great job. And it's a matter of, short stories are weird for me because they're not supposed to be an entire look at a world. It is a piece of a world and it is a piece of a character, but it still has to have a beginning, a middle, an end, and it has to feel like a complete version of itself, which is not to say,
angry.
I know they get angry, but you know what? I think, I don't know if it's because I spent an entire college class, like talking about short stories and they all look different. Some of them literally just ended nowhere in the middle of a character walking on the street. And then it just ends right after their thought. And I would be like, that's it. And I would get upset too. But then other times, It ends as well, but it ends in a place where I thought it was wrong. So it's just a matter of taste, but I do think that we should look at what the character, what the author is trying to do. For instance, my short story in the anthology, Come On In, 15 Stories About Immigration and Finding Home, which is edited by my buddy Adi El Said, is...
It has a great cover, by the way.
It's a fantastic cover. Beautiful. Yeah.
It's gorgeous.
And it comes out in October. It comes out this month. And my short story, which is my first contemporary short story, is an epistolary short story. But to me, I didn't want to start with Dear Diary, right? So I wanted to give my character voice. And so she names her diary. So she's like talking to somebody. Right. And she's telling you the worst thing that she has ever done to her family. But before she says that, she needs to tell you about herself. So the way that I get the reader to know about her is she's like, she gives her introduction and she's like, I haven't written to you in so many years because I forgot about you. And my mom says I can't buy a new journal until I finish this one. So here's what's happening. And so she's leading you to the big event, to the big thing that she did. And so this is her introduction. It's called Confessions of an Ecuadorian. Dear Yoda, I know that my last entry was dated 3 years ago on the first day of seventh grade after Horacia Montez kicked me out of our Spice Girls cover band. But it's me, Paola, and I'm back. Hi, hello, hola. It would take me 100 years to tell you everything that's happened, and my mom says I can't buy another diary until I finish this one. So in the words of Inigo Montoya, let me sum up. And that is the introduction to Paola, who...
I love that name.
It's my sister's name.
One of my favorite names.
It's my sister. I named her after my sister in Ecuador. And so she's giving you this crash course into her life and everything she thinks about. And because I wanted to write a story about immigration that examined it from the point of view of a kid who doesn't know what's happening, right? Like a kid who doesn't understand immigration until they have to question things around them. Like, oh, this girl in my school, she, like, had to leave and, like, they made her leave and she couldn't come back. Or, like, kids in my school tell me I'm not really from here, right? Because I wasn't born here. And so, like, it's through the lens of everything else is happening in her regular teenagehood. But it's not, like, a story about immigration where she has to deal with the violence of it. It's more right, the microaggressions.
Like you're anchoring into all the other things. It reminds me of, like, my favorite show when I was a teen that I wish lasted more than one season, which is called My So-Called Life, which you're too young to know, but it's so good.
I've heard about that.
And it's like that. It's just, this kid is going through all this stuff, and there's a backdrop of, like, really serious things, but it's still just a show about her feelings.
I wanted to capture, I don't know if you've seen Dairy Girls.
Yes, but, so good.
So I wanted to capture that, right? They're just these teenage girls, but they're in the middle of this, of, like, the Irish Civil War, right?
Yeah.
And, like, the conflict. And it's you get the sense that there's really serious, heavy stuff happening in the background, but your life doesn't stop, right? The mistakes you make don't stop. The mistakes that other people make don't stop. Friendships don't stop. Crushes don't stop. Life keeps going on. So how does it look? What does it look like? And so that's what the short story was about. And I would love to make that into a longer piece. I also think my title is hilarious.
You just crack yourself up. This is what this is about.
Because somebody called me an Ecuadorian once, and I was like, I have never forgotten it.
Oh my God. I love it. And it's so true, but so awesome. And it's such a good short story, and it's such a good title. And the voice of the character just really just sings. You want to follow and see, like, what's going on with this kid? What is happening?
Yeah. So how do these short story collections come about?
Usually there is an editor, or maybe two, who has an idea. And they're like, I want to do a short story collection about dragons. And then, just to give an example, and then they go around to other authors and say, do you want to do a short story about dragons? I'm doing a short story collection about dragons. And they invite you to give a story. And then you curate that and you edit those stories into a collection so that they all sort of thematically, or I don't know, they have overarching themes and connections.
Right. But there's always
how you and Natalie did it.
Yeah. So Natalie and I put together Vampires Never Get Old. We were floating in a pool in Alabama. And it was during a writing retreat, and it was cold. But
you left me.
Yes, it was an adult romance retreat. You would not have liked it. but so yeah, Julie Murphy was in the pool, and we were all. It was just a bunch of fun, and I just remember I was in my cups, and I was like, "Do you know what I miss?"
I can imagine this right now.
Vampires. And we were all like, yeah, we miss vampires. But then we started talking about, like, but we want to see different kind of vampires. Like, imagine if Julie Murphy wrote a vampire short story and Julie was like, I would write a Fat Slayer right away. Like, she was like, I'm going to be in this. And then we were like, who could, like, what about unexpected authors writing vampires, right? And so we thought of Samira, if Samira Ahmed, you know, if you know her, she's a contemporary author, but she loves science fiction and fantasy. So it became just this perfect introduction. And then we have people who we would expect because they are science fiction and fantasy authors, like Danielle and like Rebecca Roanhorse and Victoria Schwab. And so we asked all these people and everyone said yes. And
Aren't you guys lucky ducks?
Yeah. And so we kept the anthology small. It was only 10 people. Some anthologies have 15 people. But we really loved what we curated.
And it's so awesome. And I had a great time. And because of you two, my two babes, Natalie and you, I found the world of my adult book. Like, I found my entry point. Like, I knew what I wanted to do for my adult world. However, I didn't know how to land it. And I was able to do that because of you.
Thanks. And look at me. Natalie. Just doing the Lord's work.
I know. I'm gonna have to dedicate something to you.
I'm waiting. I'm still waiting. Look. I'm gonna dedicate something to you one day. It'll be my debut children's picture book called The Meanest Girl in Mean Town.
Look, Natalie's in that too.
Yeah.
Why are you playing games? And you are the like little girl who's like, I'm not mean. And then the lights go out and it's like, somebody kicked me in my back. Who was that? It wasn't me. Yes,
there's
been
a whole
you.
Song about me by Shaggy.
It was you. Oh my God, I hate you. I hate it. You see, we're back, right? That means there's songs. That means there's bickering. That means there's just all of the normal D&D shenanigans. We're back at it. Season 3, like no holds bar.
Right. You're so silly.
How am I silly? I just tell the truth. Anyways, thank you so much for coming to Short Story Zone with us on our first podcast back for season 3.
Thank you everyone for listening. There's going to be so much more. Just you wait. Make sure you subscribe to our podcast. We have a Ko-fi if you would like to chip in. And we have a Patreon, which we will also link to in our show notes and on our website, deadlinecity.com. Deadline City is part of the Frolic Podcasts Network. Find more podcasts you'll love at frolic.media/podcasts.